Directions Media. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, June the 14th. Every week, this podcast brings you the news that shapes the geospatial industry, location-based information technology, and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Today's topic is preparing for the big data onslaught. How big is big data, and who are the big dogs of big data? We'll tackle that and more, but first a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. You can now access ArcGIS on your Microsoft Windows Phone 7 device. Download the free app from the Zune Marketplace. For more information, visit esri.com/windowsphone.
Every other month, it seems like the IT industry finds the next big buzzword for us to chew on. And big data seems to be the one that we hear a lot about, and I think it's here to stay. It's been discussed for the last couple of years. Wikipedia says the size of big data varies depending on the capabilities of the organization to manage the whole process. For some organizations, facing hundreds of gigabytes of data for the first time may trigger a need to reconsider data management options. For others, it may take tens or hundreds of terabytes before the data size becomes a significant consideration, unquote. Adina, you and I spoke with Jeff Jonas of IBM earlier in the year. He's a big data expert, and he talked about how organizations need to make sense of what they learn as fast as they learn it. I fully stuck onto that line because it makes sense to me, making sense of data as fast as they learn it. He's essentially talking about tackling the knowledge side of the equation of big data. Safra Katz, the co-president of Oracle, glibly remarked recently, "We'll let others mess around with terabytes of data. We have much grander plans." Don't know what they are, but Oracle is big data these days, it seems. Let me see if I can bring some of this down to reality for our geospatial professionals. To me, big data is dealing with millions of credit card transactions and taking place somewhere. And then if I'm a CIO of a retailer, for example, trying to tease out the patterns of purchases that can be used by my marketing department more effectively, or it could be millions of mobile device transactions for location-based services, or it might even be the challenge of stitching together hyperspectral bands of image data to classify and map, for example, lodgepole pine trees in the Cascade Forest. So those, to me, are kind of the applications that come to my mind. We in geospatial seem to be being bombarded from two sides of this issue, from the enterprise side, where maybe there are statewide repositories of remotely sensed data, for example. And I'm not thinking just of satellite data, but right now there's airborne and even terrestrial LIDAR point cloud data. Or there's the other side of that, which is this a location-based services issue where there are now millions of people using mobile devices for transacting location-based requests? So I guess our job is really to put into perspective for the average geospatial professional all of the moves by the large IT companies that are bringing to market solutions for data storage, data processing, and perhaps setting up a platform as a service solution for analyzing these large amounts of geospatial data. So we've got Oracle and Oracle Spatial. They've now got their Exadata data appliance. We've had announcements from Google about Google Earth Builder, a solution for storing your data in the cloud. And now Apple comes out with their iCloud, and as we'll get to, this may be a play in the location-based services market. I also don't want to ignore some of our friends in the market like WeoGeo, who are supporting development of the cloud-based data repository and marketplace for Pitney Bowes, MapInfo. So how would you address the average geo person and tell them what to look for when they're tackling these big data problems?
Well, I think we in geospatial have always felt like we had big data because our data sets were certainly bigger than everybody else's. And a lot of that, as you point out, had to do with imagery. So we always felt like we were on top of big data, and the things that were holding us back were things like getting enough hardware and getting it fast enough, to run fast enough. And for the most part, I think we managed that pretty well. But I think what we learned talking to Jeff Jonas is that, boy, we don't know anything about big data. It's a whole other world out there. And the kinds of questions you ask and how you ask them and when you ask them and against what data you ask them, it's a whole new world. It's not just an extension of what we're doing now. So I think my sense right now is that we don't even know what it is we're going to be doing. We don't even know what the data is or what we're going to be doing with it or what questions to ask. So I think we really need to think about this whole problem as a whole new subject that needs to be researched and understood.
I think that's true. And the sense of what I get the average geospatial person is dealing with right now may be as simple as I've got a couple of backup drives sitting here. Maybe it's a terabyte size repository. But my problems are only going to get bigger. I may have to go get another terabyte disk over here, or I may have a whole shelf full of CDs or DVDs from the data people sent me, and I have no way to manage that data. And that's one side of the problem that I think the average person may be dealing with. This whole other side of the issue that we talked to Jeff Jonas about, which is millions of transactions, billions of rows of data coming into an organization daily that have to be understood and processed and analyzed. And there's nothing out there that seems to give me the automatic answer. There seems to be this gap between storing the data, managing data, and then analyzing the data. And I think that's what Jeff was trying to get at to people. I don't know if we know how to tackle that side of the problem. We're dealing with the storage issue first.
I think you're exactly right, and I think it's almost like we need to go back to school to learn how to ask the questions and execute the queries against these new gigantic data sets with more information in them than we've been thinking about. I mean, let's face it, the good old SQL queries that we used to do in Oracle about find me all the wetlands that fall into this area, that's child's play.
Yeah.
The kinds of questions we're asking now are from a whole different realm. And let me just, to put that in context, I was reading in Business Week this morning in an article called Why Procter & Gamble Needs to Shave More Indians. What an awesome title. And it's about, you know, how do we grow Procter & Gamble across the planet? And they're talking about one of their senior guys and how he's going to do it. And let me quote. And he endlessly analyzes data gleaned from P&G's proprietary computerized marketing information system, which can crunch up to 10,000 scenarios simultaneously and predict, say, whether premium-priced diapers will be a bust in Morocco or the impact a toothpaste promotion could have in Brazil, unquote. Awesome. Those are questions that are like beyond the fathom that you could even ask them or have algorithms to predict what will happen.
Well, I think you made a good point about going back to school to know how to ask questions, because we have many more dimensions to the problems at this point. So we not only have our 2D problems and our 3D problems, we have our 4D problems of time and scale and change that we talk a lot about change detection. I don't know if we really understand change detection or how to ask that question other than overlaying one satellite image on top of another and I see the change from one year to another. There's a whole other issue, multi-year, multi-dimensional analysis of big problems.
Right, at different scales. You might get different answers. And again, I think for me, this keeps coming back to we don't even know what the question is, let alone how to ask it.
And so it goes back to the issue of how are we educating our analysts or geospatial analysts to tackle these things. Maybe they're doing this type of analysis within the bowels of the NGA or other issues, but they don't seem to bubble up to the top for the average person, for example.
No, and let me give you a very pointed example of maybe what could be considered limitations in our educational system. Last semester or two, I had a student who was doing a presentation about certification in GIS and whether it was valuable and how widespread it was and those kinds of things. In the process of this, we had a conversation and he said, well, how am I going to find out how widespread this is? And I said, well, I'm going to push it back to you. Where are there data sets that could help you with this? And let's forget about their size for a minute. And what I was trying to get at was, there are data sets that can help you with this. There is the data set that lists all the people who have certain certifications. There's that. there are all of the databases of all of the job postings for GIS people, some of which require or request certifications. So what frustrated me was that he couldn't even identify places to look, let alone what question to ask of those databases. So in a sense, this is the grown-up version of searching the web.
Right.
We know the data is all out there somewhere, or we can assume that it is. But what question are we even going to ask of it to get at solving our particular question at hand?
Yeah.
And I wonder how you teach that. That's really sort of problem solving with data.
Yeah, I'll give you another example. Last week while I was at the Pitney Bowes Business Insight Conference, I spoke with Tom Exter, the chief demographer of the company, and they're in the midst of analyzing the 2010 census and the American Community Survey. And because the American Community Survey is the now the detailed census questionnaire for the U.S., there's lots of data to tease out. And just as one example, he was going over the trends, the pattern, the population trends over the last year with respect to understanding the baby boom generation and how that's going to affect the policies of the government to it when they're dealing with Medicare. And what was interesting was to see the wave of population growth going back of the generations, the echo boom from our kids in the baby boom generation, and how that would influence policy for the next 20 and 30 years. And I sat there thinking, oh my God, there's a lot of data that has to be crunched here. And it's not just simple counting the people. It's what are their purchasing patterns? Where are they living? The whole issue of place-based initiative, these are big data problems, right? And I don't even know what questions to ask of that data set, let alone how to find that data set in the bowels of the census. It's a real challenge because, as I said before, there seems to be this gap between the knowledge that we need to have just to ask the questions and then getting the data itself.
Right, and then getting at the value of the data. Because in a sense, if you looked at sort of the census data that you just described and then you layer onto it the geographic component, it gets even more complicated. And the potential for asking questions, the number of questions rises even higher.
Right.
And so now here we are in this world of location-based services and companies are gathering check-in data. And guess what? I don't think they know what to do with it.
Right.
Now, remember the example of Skyhook releasing its spot rank service, which tells
right.
you where people are checking in.
Right.
And we showed this example of the finish line of the Boston Marathon. The week before the marathon, there were not very many check-ins. But the day of the marathon, there were lots of check-ins.
Right.
Okay. Yes, you can ask that question. But what's the valuable question to ask? You know, what really gives you some insight?
Yeah.
And I don't think we know that.
Right.
And I'll go one step further. I think the value in location-based services isn't we know where you are so we can market stuff to you. It's much, much deeper than that. And
right.
it has to do with this big data collection and getting at things that we haven't even thought of from that data set. And again, we don't even know what the questions are. Maybe they have to do with healthcare. Maybe they have to do with what kind of job you should seek. I mean, they could have to do with every other aspect of our lives besides what we're going to buy today.
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's a good transition to the last issue I want to raise, which is the announcement by Apple and their iCloud solution. It's powered by Teradata. And in a ZDNet article I read that we posted to All Points blog, the second paragraph of the story of this of the blogger from ZDNet mentioned that this was a geospatial services play, which completely took me by surprise. And so what he says, and I'll quote, "Very handy for the location-aware services that iCloud provides, and valuable for retailers and manufacturers who want deep insight into their customers' buying habits and geographical spread," unquote. And I think we've been waiting for Apple to do something in LBS for a long time. And all of a sudden here, this one blogger somehow teases out from the iCloud announcement that this is a geospatial play, and it just completely blew my mind.
Do you agree with the blogger that that's the way to read this?
I don't even know where he came up with the idea that this was a geospatial play. I'm not sure I agree with him, but the fact is that somebody must have mentioned it to him. I don't think he came up with this idea on his own. So it took me by surprise.
Let me tell you how I read that same article.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which is in the storage blog at ZDNet.
Right.
What I think this fellow did was he saw that Steve Jobs mentioned Teradata. Steve Jobs, to my knowledge, did not use the word geospatial anywhere
in
his talk. He went to the Teradata website and searched on what Teradata's databases do. And what he did was quote from that website in his article and then jump to the conclusion that maybe, just maybe, that's where Apple is going. I don't think he has any specific insight. And further, if he was really pushing this and looking at the broader Apple space, he would have made the connection with the statement that Apple made some weeks ago about when there was that big data collection hoo-ha.
Yep.
And they revealed that they were collecting crowdsourced traffic data to build an improved traffic service to launch in the next couple of years. Okay, so if you're going to go down the geospatial Apple path, maybe that's the place to start to tie into. And the latest on that that I found has to do with yet the latest patent from Apple, which talks about a dynamic alert for calendar events that ties traffic and weather into telling you when you have to leave for your meeting to get there on time.
Right.
Now, could that tap into a Teradata geospatially enabled database? Sure. But is Apple going to some big play like Google might in learning everything it can about you and then offering that as some kind of a service? I don't see that from this evidence.
Well, it's another piece of the puzzle that could be relevant down the road. I think I see a lot of these big IT players not quite understanding what it is they've got and how it is they offer a solution for big data and geospatial. It's kind of these big footsteps, but not quite the nitty-gritty of what you would go to market with to tell an average user about how to use their geospatial solution. It's a little disjointed at this point, and I think we're all kind of scratching our heads, well, why are these guys doing this?
And I think just as we talk about geospatial not being the center of the universe, here it clearly is not.
Right.
I mean, for Oracle, geospatial is this little piece hanging off the back, and I would argue it's the same for Teradata and Netezza and a bunch of other companies that tried to push it to the fore, and yet it has not come to the fore yet. Maybe it still will.
Yeah, I that would be one area where I might disagree with you. I think that it could come to the fore. It just hasn't. I don't think they know the right questions to ask yet, but I think that there's so much geospatial data being collected that eventually somebody will figure out that this is much more important than we ever thought it was. So maybe that's too geocentric to think about.
And I agree with you. And I think the problem may have been that we don't yet have the thinkers who have figured out what to do with all this technology, all this speed, all this storage, and all this data. We've got lots of companies collecting it and designing systems to manage it and to plumb its depths. But we haven't got the geospatial thinkers. And maybe they're the GI science people who are going to do this. And they're just not there yet.
I think that's a really good way to put it.
So if you're going to school and studying geospatial, maybe hang out with the big data guys, and maybe that will be you, and you'll make $1 million.
Sounds good. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Our sponsor, Esri, would like to remind you that a new book from Esri Press entitled ARC Hydro Groundwater, GIS for Hydrogeology, describes the groundwater data model, a new geodatabase designed for representing groundwater systems using ArcGIS software. The book describes a science-based methodology that federal, state, and regional groundwater agencies can use when researching and resolving water resource issues. For more information, visit www.esri.com/EsriPress. I'd like to mention two noteworthy items from us at Directions Media. The first is that we've opened our call for presentations to the 2011 Rocket City Geospatial Conference. We're focusing on some key national issues this year, including cybersecurity, emergency response to tornado outbreaks in Alabama and Joplin, Missouri, and location and security for the nation's nuclear power plants. Also, we already have over 800 people signed up for our next webinar entitled Exploring Google Earth Builder with the product team, and that will be on June 16th. You can sign up at directionsmag.com/webinars. If you'd like to leave a comment on today's podcast, please do so in the comment box where this podcast is posted on Directions Magazine or by writing to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.